This is Nash Barrera. Today's date is November 16th, 1972. The time is 6 p.m. And I will be interviewing Mr. Charles Delaney of Saginaw, Michigan. Topics to be discussed are the local UAWs of the 1930s and UAW Retired Workers Council. Sir Delaney, how were the working conditions and basic labor relations between management and labor of Saginaw Malibu Iron Plant, as basically from the early 1930s, from works you can remember, or up to then?
Well, conditions are really bad. No seniority, no net seniority, you know, prior to the union. You held your job at the place of supervision. I had no recourse to any government agency or grievance, armed grievances, real or imagined. So you were at the, as I said prior, that you're the in the hands of the foreman or the boss or whatever. If you didn't like your looks or caught your eye, the layoff come, you got it. And if you could polish an apple, you kept a job. Those are real conditions until the passage of the Wagner Act. And then things really started popping. And of course, most people knew about the sit-downs. We weren't too much involved over the Malibu, but it's bad enough. And then, of course, we had inter-union strife. After that, we had the, he was a boss, and he took over the union at that time. I can't recall his name, but finally got things straightened out, and we started going places. We gained all kinds of things, and the main one, naturally, being seniority. Personally, it was a couple, 3 years before I got heavily involved in the union myself. I thought might pull through, because prior to that, I had an experience in a small plant in Saginaw way back in 26. Nelson Brothers was the name of it. And we had no union at that time, of course, and there wasn't as overtime. We got a new supervisor who said if we didn't work overtime, we were all fired.
But how many hours were you working that day?
Well, working at that time, 8, 9, 10. If you came in the mornings, no work, you got paid for nothing. No pay at all. You were sent home. But in this particular instance, this new superintendent said that if the guys that didn't work overtime would be fired. So we all got together. I worked in the courtroom department that time. And we agreed that we'd walk out at the stipulated time. I think it's 4:30 was the regular quitting time. But two of us walked out, but nothing happened to us. And that kind of taught me a bit of a lesson to watch out for that kind of thing. And after that, as the years rolled by, during the war, naturally, we couldn't do too much. But up until the 50s, we had various things happen, but we had improvements all the time. And in the 50s, we got our pension plan in 1950. This was the first plan to my knowledge we got the pension plan. And that was limited to $100, including the pension. And of course, we've come a long way since then.
Sure,
but it's
has.
A fact that the guy can get as high as $7 a month for each year's payment. And in the meantime, I got a little higher up in the union personally. For a couple of years, I was the court secretary of the local and on the committee quite a bit, and trustee of the local later on. And then, upon retirement, it was my ambition to get a drop incentive for the retirees. So the president of the local at that time appointed me when I retired to this committee of the retirees, the type of retirees they had at that time. It wasn't spearheaded particularly by the international, but it finally developed that they had a regular setup for retirees. In the area of the local, each local had a chapter. And then a couple of years later, they formed a council in each area too. For example, each local chapter was apportioned delegates according to the membership. I think my local president is entitled to 10 delegates. Now, they meet every month, the chapters do, but the council meets every 3 months and conducts the business. And then once a year, they have a yearly meeting at the regional office in Grand Rapids, like the office and so forth. But harking back to the chapters, as time went on, they instituted what they call a voluntary dollar deduction from your paycheck. That keeps your chapter going to a certain degree. But under the Constitution of the International, each dues dollar apportions 1 cent to the retirees fund. So that goes now to the area council, and they're pretty well healed nationally with this area, with all the big GM locals. So with the admin of the council, the chairman of the council was a delegate to the region as a member of the advisory council. We used to meet every 6 months and set up policy for the rest of the retirees in the region. And we did a lot of good with that. For example, when we hold a picnic in this area number 5, each one attending the picnic is paid, the council is paid $1.50 for each member and his spouse, or his or her spouse. And then a little later on at the advisory council meeting, we got another $1.50 for a Christmas party or whatever, whichever you want. Now, that's come to fruition right now. Last Thursday, they had the monthly meeting. They meet every month, have a party, not a party, but they have entertainment, bingo, coffee and donuts. Various times they have these parties, like yesterday they had this turkey party. But quite a good thing. And well, what we're doing now, as I think I explained to you last night, we used to have a representative from the international to service this area. This region, and another one in Wisconsin. Well, he got taken up to a higher job. So what we're planning now is the people who have been doing the work are put on as part-time representatives to the retirees. For example, I'm going to Bay City Monday for 3 days to take training on this particular issue. And I will be paid expense money, I think $75 a month, also dinners, serving figures, and paid mileage. And each one has a backup man. So the silver's going to Grand Rapids next Monday morning. But in any case, we are far better off than and as far as UAW is concerned, we're far better off than some of the other smaller shops, you know, where they have no pension funding like that.
Mr. Delaney. Now, as far as going back to pensions, now, in an article of 1970 of March,
mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, Saginaw Foundries, which was burned down in 1969, and Lufkin Rule, which closed down operations a few years back. What progress has been made? At that time, you mentioned something about that in that article, but as far as today, what progress has been made?
You mean as far as helping those people?
You're right.
That is part of this new setup. I think I mentioned last night that we are projecting setting up chapters in four more areas within this council. And those two plants, the Saginaw Foundry, we couldn't set up in the Foundry alone because that burned out and they are a part of a unit of our local, 455, and we do have our own. But outside of that, you have the Lufkin Rule. We can set up a chapter there, and I've got all the information. And the graphite, and the Universal Engineering out at Franklin, and the food place, and Wheeler. The name escapes me right now. And we are planning of getting these people organized. As long as they have 25 retirees, they are eligible to their own chapter. As long as they have 25 retirees, and each one does have that many. Under the rules, under the Constitution, where you do not have enough from one small plant, they can more or less form an amalgamation. But we stress very strongly that the retirees have got to work much harder for themselves than they did previous to the Supreme Court ruling. Because I think most people know that the manufacturers, the employers, do not have to bargain on retirees. By the same token, they are former employees, and to cite one instance, for example, some retirees go back to work again. So actually, you're not really cut off from the plant, from the institution.
Delaney, what is your most remembered involvement with the union? Can you, let's see, as far back as you can remember, I know it's been a long time, start from what were your specific roles in the union, let's say when you first started in the 30s?
I can recall the only strike we had was 113 or 117 days, I think it was. Personally, I was a committeeman on the third shift, and as I spoke to you before, the night superintendent had been in the office most of the evening trying to find out our plans. I didn't find
well,
out.
Approximately, when was this?
Pardon?
When you were a third shift committeeman, when were you?
Third shift committeeman.
Yes, but when were you, when date was this?
Well, what date?
Yes, as far as years, approximately.
Gee, I don't recall. It's been, before we got the pension, so it'd be after the war, probably about 48, I believe.
Oh, that's close enough, right.
Anyway, we at the end of the third shift, we struck. And I didn't go home. I went over to the union hall, and I stayed there for the balance of the day. In fact, I was on my feet for 22 hours. And it was a long one, as I said before. We got a lot of help. But it really changed things.
You said that really changed things. Can you give some examples?
Well,
as compared to today, the
bargaining, we had the impression they were out to break the union. In those days, anything went. But we thought that after that length of time, it was pretty cold weather times there, we thought we were in a stronger position than we ever were. I don't recall what happened to the other the big three. But we thought it was worthwhile anyway. Mm-hmm. At least the union men, some of the car carriers didn't think so. I suppose you know what a card carrier is.
Right. Can you remember any event as far as back in your union service with the union? Any event that that you can best remember? That sticks in your mind the most?
Well, for example, speaking of that long strike, I helped picket the gun plant and also Plant 1. And one of the memorable things was we had a tarpaulin over the fire, close to the fire, and the whole thing went up in smoke. That's just society shit. But most of the guys I knew then, a lot of them passed on, and some are still fairly active in the union, but in general, there's not too many of them around.
Oh, I didn't know that other General Motors division employees that were on strike at that time could strike with other GM divisions. I thought that they had...
That was a general strike, 117 days. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. The what's the term that they use for it? Secondary strike or something of that nature. No, it was in general. We used to pick each other's plans. Mm-hmm. So, presently, I just can't think. You know, at my age, it's pretty difficult to remember some of those things. I can remember events way farther back than that, and I can now.
Going back again to when you first started working, can you give some specific
When I first started working? Give me an example.
Well, for instance, I worked at Saginaw Steering Gear, there's a lot of places where you see where pretty dirty places, where conditions were kind of
terrific,
bad.
Terrific.
But could you give some specific examples?
In the first instance, you didn't have no red feather fund then, or whatever you call it, fund. The employment manager shoved a form in front of you, and you signed that for 10 cents a week deduction for welfare. Otherwise, you didn't get the job. I found that afterwards. 10 cents a week out of your pay. And I signed in the Malville at 37 to 45 cents as a core maker. During the slack periods, I go on cleaning cores, which is 37 and a half cents an hour. It's a cut of a few cents. You worked 100 hours, which you didn't get on. You got the deduction for welfare. There was no overtime, whatever. So you can figure for 100 hours, you got $37.50, and the welfare deducted out of that. So that's the condition of that time.
But. As far as the plant...
Can you stop that? Am I using your tape up, or...?
No, I'll just leave it on, and it'll shut off. It'll let me know when turn it right over. It's for a half hour, then we switch to the other side. But the facilities of Leslie Malibu plant...
The working facilities, the only time the plant was cleaned up was when the big shots came from Detroit.
I see. So they were basically bad.
They were painted, and the whole mess was cleaned right up. In fact, I was using an example. I used to wear a forage cap with all my buttons around my head. Mm-hmm. And I was a corn maker, and as a committeeman, they stuck me in the aisle with a broom sweeping. Show you how they treated the union. Yes, you had to watch your step. But finally, as I said, you got seniority, and you still have a lot of trouble, of course. But without a union, I can't imagine what it would have been eventually, because you take your grievance. Instead of the whole bunch stopping, they call the committeeman, and you take your complainant and the committeeman out of the picture. And they talk and talk. Sometimes it's been abused, and over the years it was abused, undoubtedly. But by the same token, you're not shutting down a whole bunch of men from working. You're not stopping a whole bunch of men from working. And there's still a lot of injustice, but injustices, but in comparison, it's heaven, in a manner of speaking.
Mm-hmm. What from the local agreements, what would you say is the most benefited you, let's say, besides pension, which I presume would be
your I forget the paragraph now, but if you got the seniority and the experience, you were entitled to the job. If you didn't, you had a case. But in my case, I figured I was discriminated against. They tried to get rid of me in a big way. Finally, they offered me a job in the pattern shop. No, in 15. And I stipulated what shift I wanted. I didn't want the first. And when I came out of the office with all the plant people and the committee were there, when I came out and talked to the superintendent, I said, "What shift?" He said, "First." I said, "I don't want it." Well, there was a little underground work after that. The foreman of the coal room got to me and said, "I got a job in the pattern shop." So I gave it a whirl. And then I went to the pattern shop. I did setup work and finally became an old machine repairman. That's the way I benefited personally. But I figured I knew I had to be entitled to that. Now, that's all changed. You can apply for any job, as you maybe know.
Right.
And if you have the ability and the seniority, you're entitled to that job, and that's where you're in the first place. Mm-hmm. Instead of polishing apples, which it amounted to.
But at that time, your seniority didn't qualify you for what shift?
You had shift preference.
You had shift preference?
Oh, at that time, no. That's something you developed later. And, in fact, I've been out 10 years now, and things have pretty much changed. But I do go to the meetings and try and keep up with them.
Now, this retired council.
A retired council?
Yes. Now, going back to that, nationally, this is the first time I've heard about it, and I presume other people is the first time they heard about the Retired Workers Council.
Comprised of your chapters.
But nationally, when did it begin? Originally.
When did it?
Yes. To the best of your knowledge.
Let's see, about, possibly 6 years ago, or maybe a little longer. Our involvement was this. We took two busloads of retirees. We had a kind of a club at that time. We took two busloads of retirees to Lansing. And the International had a Michigan, a seminar. We were there for just one day. And out of that came the formation of the chapters. And it was explained to us at the time, we had lawyers on, all our big people, that they wanted to make it mandatory, $1 a person, $1 a member. But the lawyers explained, and to this day we've never gotten it. It cannot be mandatory, it has to be a voluntary dollar. And if you want to pay me, I'll be okay. If you're on a plan where they have a check off, they take it right out of your check. Like, for example, I get $15 a month taken out of my pension check, towards my income tax. See, that's mm-hmm. another game. Well, of course, that's a contribution from the corporation. Let's put it that way. But anyway, are you working to pay with the government?
No, I worked as a paymaster.
I see. Well, yeah, you.
I worked a few times.
You know that.
Right, I do.
You know that we have a dollar say now, a voluntary dollar goes through you, I suppose, anyway. Mm-hmm. It's how many checks up every month. But we would have liked to get a mandatory dollar. But what we do now, we have the pension committee man. We work hand in glove with the pension committee man. And people come in or are going to retire. And let's say we work on them. We try and point out the benefits to them of that dollar contribution. It takes money. And we try to impress them. And we have very few turns down the door. Now, when we started out, we didn't have the know-how of this particular thing. So consequently, there was people that we passed up a long time ago, but they'll never pay that dollar. And if they only knew, they know the benefits they're getting, But if they only acknowledged it, they'd come and pay a dollar to help our work on that.
Delaney, I noticed in doing some historical research on you in that 1970 article, it said that you think that young men today learn by your experience.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was very good, but could you give some examples?
Well, we try and impress them without going back too far in yesterday. We try and impress upon them the condition that we worked under. As a matter of fact, I can go farther back than that. When I first joined you, it was 1923. When I sailed aboard the Mauritania, as the article says, I think it's in there. But I had to join the Union before I got the job. There was something very specific about that ship, though. You had to be an ex-Navy man, and the course is going back to Britain. The complement of that vessel had to be 75% of Royal Fleet Reserve. That meant they were immediate reserve in case of war they were called up. And the crew had to be composed of 75%. Well, I was out of the Navy, British Navy at the time, for 3 years. And so consequently, I didn't have too much trouble getting the job, but I had to get by the Union, which it turned out it wasn't too bad. So those are conditions you worked under then. That I presume at the time the seamen and firemen got pretty strong over there. Speaking of safety, I was a committeeman at the time working in the core room, but I had the whole foundry as well as the core room in addition. Now we had an explosion on the foundry. The cause of that, we figure, was at that time part of the composition of the sand, molding sand, was what they called sea coal. But after this accident, they outlawed it. There was four colored guys killed. Our case in point was the fact that I had a grievance from the last one to die. We never settled a grievance. I can't recall what the meat of the grievance was, but that grievance went to limbo. And things like that. I think for the first 20 years I worked there, there was an average at least of one a year of deaths. Another one was in a tunnel under the line. There was an explosion. A guy from St. Charles worked one day. He got killed in his first day at work.
Yeah.
Mill right at the entrance, he got blew out. He wasn't damaged too bad. And I would say on average, just off the top of my head, it averaged one death a year from various causes. A truck driver got under a hopper, and you're supposed to pull a lever, but it jammed, and he got a shovel to unjam it, we might say, and they picked him up in pieces. And when he won Sandy, a student from Bay City was out in salvage. That is, well, he dumped all the scrap metal and went through grading to sort it out. Three real trucks at that time. You've probably never seen them. But they had two in front and one in the back. And they were a death instrument. In the first instance, if you turn too fast, the whole thing would topple over. So he ran the dump truck on the front there, up the pile, and the whole thing come back around me. Come in city. I had a job.